The industrial role of Auschwitz. The camps at Auschwitz were, of course, part of the same concentration camp system as the camps we have just discussed. However, the operations referred to with the term Auschwitz were really, in many ways, in a class by themselves. This is so much the case that, in order to see the role of Auschwitz clearly, it is necessary to go back considerably in time. It is also necessary, unfortunately, to indulge in a certain amount of discussion that may seem excessively technical at first. The principal cause of the German defeat in World War I in 1918 had been shortages brought about, chiefly, by the British blockade. Shortages of such things as oil and rubber had been crippling the army, and near-starvation conditions in Germany had made the internal political situation unpredictable and unstable. Germany capitulated, a victim of, among other things, the 20th century's first energy crisis. The extreme vulnerability of Germany in respect of raw materials had, of course, been realized by the German chemical industry during the war, and after the war the popularity of the concept of autarky, non-reliance on imports or foreign aid, was partially based on this consideration. The only raw materials that concern us here are oil and rubber, of which there was essentially none in Germany. In Europe, only Romania had significant oil resources, and there was no natural rubber anywhere in Europe. There were, however, huge sources of coal in Germany and elsewhere in Europe. The great German chemicals company, IG Farben, was in 1918 a collection of six smaller companies, which later combined in 1925 to form Farben. The principal predecessor company, Badische Aniline und Soda Fabrik, BASF, of Ludwigshafen am Rhein had, starting early in World War I, been working on processes for producing synthetic oil and synthetic rubber from coal. These investigations continued after the formation of Farben, and also after the rise of Hitler in 1933. The Nazi government soon adopted a policy of subsidizing these autarky-oriented developments. Thus, on account of government encouragement, the real need for the synthetics, and the general German scientific technological preeminence of the time, especially in chemistry and chemical engineering, Germany was substantially ahead of the rest of the world in these areas. Synthetic oil was by far the easier of the two problems. Coal is mainly carbon. The general principle is that coal treated with hydrogen gas at high pressure and temperature, hydrogenation, resulted in oil. The usual range of chemical products could be made from this oil, dyes, explosives, drugs, etc. Another state of hydrogenation yielded gasoline. The idea was basically simple, although the process was inherently expensive, and most research consisted in a search for the most effective catalysts. During World War II, there were many synthetic oil plants in and around Germany. They produced about 75% of the oil available to the Germans, the rest came mainly from Romania. Synthetic rubber was a different matter. The technical problems in developing a sufficiently economic synthetic rubber suitable for tires were most severe, and were not really resolved until approximately the beginning of the war. The basic steps in making rubber are first making long chains of molecules of some sort, polymerization, and then causing these chains to cross-stitch, to join each other at various points, vulcanization. One needed a molecule congenial to polymerization and vulcanization, and it was found that butadiene was particularly suitable. In the late 20s, it had been found that sodium was an excellent catalyst for polymerization of the butadiene, and consequently the synthetic rubber that was being made from butadiene with sodium, Na, as catalyst was called Buna rubber. The sodium had been dropped by 1935, but the term Buna was retained. By replacing 25% of the butadiene with styrene, Buna S rubber, the type particularly suited for tires, was obtained. The earliest serious German Buna S plant, and the largest, was the Schkopau plant, started in 1937 and completed in 1939. It had a capacity of 6,000 tons per month. A second plant was started at Hulls in 1938, and was in operation in August 1940. Its capacity was 4,000 tons per month. A third plant was started in January 1941 at Ludwigshafen, Farben Research Headquarters, and it was producing Buna in March 1943. Its capacity was 2,500 tons per month. The fourth, at Auschwitz, was begun in 1941, and was designed for a capacity of 3,000 tons per month. During all this plant construction, research on new processes continued, and the differences in the processes used in the four plants reflected this. All started from coal, but at Schkopau, the butadiene was produced via a classical calcium carbide acetylene butadiene sequence. At Hulls, the carbide state was replaced by one involving hydrocarbon gases. Ludwigshafen reverted to the classical sequence, but the superior REPA process was introduced for the acetylene butadiene state. The Buna plant at Auschwitz also used a version of the classical sequence. The reason for the appearance of Auschwitz in this context is very simple. Auschwitz was a huge industrial operation. When Germany annexed a large part of Poland after the partitioning of Poland in 1939 by Germany and Russia, it came into the possession of the great coal fields of Polish Upper Silesia. It was naturally decided to exploit this, and the possibilities for a hydrogenation and Buna plant were examined. It was found that the little town of Oświęcim, population 13,000, translated into German as Auschwitz, Auschwitz had been a duchy of the Habsburg Empire before World War I, was ideally located, because the three rivers that joined there could provide the necessary water, while a fourth river for carrying off the waste was nearby. In addition, Auschwitz was on the southern border of the Silesian coal fields, the Katowice, Katowice, mining region of Poland. In early 1941, it was decided to build a hydrogenation and a Buna plant at Auschwitz, employing both free and prisoner labor. By pure chance, there was already near the town a partisan POW camp holding 7,000 prisoners. It had formerly been a Polish artillery barracks. This camp became the nucleus for expansion via its own enlargement, and also the construction of additional camps. It was quickly transformed into, and remained to the last, a camp for political prisoner workers. It is usually referred to as Auschwitz I. The terms main camp, Hauptlager, and Stammlager are also sometimes used. Sometime in 1941, work had begun on a second camp, Auschwitz II, generally referred to as Birkenau, German for Birch Meadow. It was 1 to 1.5 miles northwest of Auschwitz I, and was initially referred to as a POW camp. Part of it was completed by April 1942. Russian POW labor was used for constructing the camp. Its functions will be examined at length. Some 4,000 Jews were moved out of the town to another town to make room for free labor attached to the industries. On November 16, 1941, it was decided to build a third camp, generally referred to as Monowitz, 3 miles east of the town and close to the Farben plant, for quartering labor working on and in the plant. Russian POWs were again used for constructing the camp. The relative locations of the three camps are shown in Figure 5 contained in the print and ebook editions of this book. There was also a large number of smaller camps in the outlying region, most of them within a radius of 25 miles. These outer camps, of which Ryszko and Harmenza were two relatively close in examples, were administered by the Auschwitz camp administration, and the number has been variously given as 13 to 39, depending upon what is considered a single camp. The smaller or outer camps were mainly for those who worked at the five blast furnaces or five coal mines. Monowitz and the collection of all outer camps taken together are sometimes referred to as Auschwitz III. The collection of all camps, Auschwitz I, Birkenau, Auschwitz II, and Auschwitz III, together with the industries which employed the inmates, is usually what is referred to under the blanket term Auschwitz. The prisoner population of Auschwitz II was nothing unusual, except that there was a significant number of British POWs. The NMT judgment was that the use of British POWs was not contrary to the Geneva Convention, because the Buna factory had an ultimate peaceful purpose. The Red Cross apparently concurred because, although it was specifically aware of this situation, it did not mention the employment of British POWs in its later report on the problems it had encountered during the war, in respect to the use of POWs for war-related work. Typical camp strengths were 20,000 for Auschwitz I, 35,000 for Birkenau, 30-60% women, and 15,000 for Auschwitz III. By a wide margin, Auschwitz was the largest complex of concentration camps in the German system. In August 1943, the second largest was Sachsenhausen with a population of 26,500. There were also many free laborers working and living in the area. For example, less than 30% of the workers at the Farben plant were in the prisoner category, more than half were free foreign workers who had enlisted voluntarily for labor, and the remaining approximate 20% were ordinary German employees. Auschwitz I was the administrative center for all SS functions at Auschwitz. These SS functions included the guarding, feeding, clothing, housing, recreation, and disciplining of the prisoners, and also their medical services. The working hours at Auschwitz were those standard for the German concentration camps, 11 hours per day, 6 days a week, with extra work on Sunday mornings in emergencies. At Auschwitz, there were divers recreational activities, concerts, cabaret performers, movies and athletic contests. There was even a brothel for the prisoners, staffed by professionals recruited for the purpose. Medical services receive further comment later on. The providing of such extensive services naturally meant that companies using the labor of the prisoners quote-unquote rented them from the SS. A typical rate seems to have been 4 to 6 Reichsmark, $1 to $1.50, per day and up. Thus, the prisoners were at the basis of Himmler's bureaucratic and economic empire, and accordingly this resource, together with the supporting functions of feeding, clothing, etc. were jealously guarded. Nevertheless, Farben had been big enough to get a special arrangement for those at Monowitz, It was granted full authority for the care of the prisoners there, and consequently the payments to the SS were reduced. This led to the expected scraps between the SS and Farben. The SS complained of beatings and other mistreatment, such as unsanitary conditions at the Monowitz hospital. Also, 1/5 of the people who had been registered at this hospital were discharged by being sent to Birkenau, at which time the Farben appropriations for their care immediately ceased, and they became the responsibility of the SS, which, already wounded by not being accorded its customary rights in regard to employable prisoners, was incensed at receiving in return only the unemployable from Monowitz. The SS therefore demanded that the Monowitz hospital, which had only 300 beds, be enlarged, but the reply to this, of course, was that, quote, if they aren't strong enough to work, they don't belong on the factory grounds, unquote. Birkenau, like Auschwitz I, had a responsibility of supplying labor for Farben and for subcontractors to Farben. It also supplied labor for other enterprises, such as the Krupp Fuse plant and the Siemens electrical factory. In addition, inmates worked at clearing demolished structures, draining the marshy land, road construction, operating an establishment for the cultivation of special plants, Reisko, building and operating a model farm, Harmenza, clothing manufacture, etc. Birkenau had other functions, as will be seen. It will be particularly necessary to examine the claim that at Birkenau a program of mass killings of Jews via gas chambers was in operation, the Jews having been transported to Auschwitz primarily for this purpose. The rough figures given above for camp populations are only illustrative. The Birkenau figure actually varied a great deal, and in addition, the Birkenau camp was never completed. The projected capacity of Birkenau seems to have been 200,000 prisoners, while Auschwitz I expanded to a capacity of about 30,000 and then stabilized. Thus, on the basis of seniority and also on account of quartering the Auschwitz SS administrative offices, Auschwitz I was indeed the main camp, but Birkenau, designed for the specific requirements of the Auschwitz operations, was clearly intended as the principal camp in terms of inmate accommodating functions. While the Auschwitz-Katowice region was ideal from a technical point of view, it was also wretched from a human point of view. The ground was extremely flat with no means of draining away water in many places. It was dotted with stagnant ponds which poisoned the air and caused the area to be constantly muddy. Malaria and typhus were natural, not wartime created dangers in this region. The war conditions greatly aggravated matters. It is said that, quote, motor cars were disinfected after each journey carrying prisoners or their clothing, unquote. After 1942, the hydrogenation plant at Auschwitz produced oil and gasoline and other chemicals, but by the time the camp was evacuated in January 1945, it had not produced any Buna, it was only at the point of producing acetaldehyde from acetylene. This relative slowness in plant construction was no doubt due to the initially virgin character of the area, the use of prisoner labor, and the bad health of many prisoners. The latter had further implications, which will be seen later in proper context. I do not know whether the Auschwitz Buna plant was to have been essentially the same as the Ludwigshafen plant, an improved version of the latter, or a new generation in Buna plant construction. In any case, if it had been finished, there would have been no more advanced Buna rubber plant in the world at the time.